Welcome to the Home Team Podcast. Steve Carter here with my good friends, Sam Acho and Trey Burton. The Home Team Podcast, this is where we talk about the intersection of sports and faith and family and culture. And today, we want to talk about the NFL draft. And we also want to discuss just the NBA, who we think is going to win it all, as well as some ratings that we are seeing with women's sports. Exciting stuff happening with volleyball, with UFC. But first, let's jump in to the NFL draft. Trey Burton, you as a player, you know what this is like, getting ready, getting prepared for the draft. I want to talk. What are your thoughts? Who goes number one, which we probably already know? Who are the 49ers going to draft? I just want to know, what are your initial takes on the NFL draft?
I mean, the only thing I'm worried about is Kyle Pitts. The number two, because I'll give Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence is the best player in the draft. I think hands down, we all can agree on that. But everybody has Kyle Pitts rated as the number two overall player in the draft. I don't know if that's ever happened in the history of the draft. I think
as a tight end. He's a tight end.
And so, and obviously went to the best school in the country, University of Florida. So we'll be really excited to watch, you know, him and his career and where he goes. But I think, you know, obviously he gets the short end of the stick from the sense of there's some really good quarterbacks in the draft this year. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, who goes first. I saw a mock draft yesterday that had Justin Fields going 32nd in the draft. And I'm like, man, after watching that dude during the playoffs, the college football playoffs, there ain't no way he's going that low or that high, I guess you could say. So it would just be a really, I think for the first time, we don't really know after the first pick what's going to happen and, you know, what who teams like and where everybody's going to go. But I'll be locked in on where Kyle Pitts goes. I think he's going to be a game changer in the league and it'll be a lot of fun to watch him.
Well, Trey, so what's that about? I think, and I have my Kyle Pitts take, which I'll give in a second. But these mock drafts, Justin Fields, phenomenal quarterback, went to Ohio State. I think he lost one game, total in his whole career.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, national championships, all these things. But now all of a sudden, he's falling down the draft. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, I mean, anytime. See, you watch all these quarterbacks and somehow their stock rises and falls based on their individual workouts, which, you know, have some weight, but some of these guys put all the weight on how far they can throw the ball with no shoulder pads on and no rush. You know, how often do we get to see a guy running to the left and then throwing it back against his body to the right? I mean, that's unheard of. You don't ever, you tell your quarterback from day one, don't throw the ball across, you know, your body. And so we see these dudes throwing it 80 yards, which is obviously super impressive and, you know, really accurate. But I think, I think his pro day didn't go as well as some of these other guys. He might not have had as many splash throws, but I mean, you cut the film on, bro, and you see what he can do. I think he's, you know, he'll be special. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see where he goes in the draft.
I mean, he ran a 4.4440. I mean, yeah. That dude's got wheels. And I mean, some of the throws he threw were actually in the pro day were amazing. It's just, I think there's this perception that a dude at Georgia who is backing up Jake Fromm can't get in. And then Tua as a freshman gets in. And I think so many fans in Georgia wanted to see Justin Fields play, and he never got the runtime. He goes to OSU, he destroys my favorite team. I mean, the guy is a stud, and I think what he played hurt in the playoffs.
So bro, he got smoked, bro. Absolutely smoked. I couldn't believe he got up and kept playing after that.
He kept playing, man. And so I think there's this perception piece. There's also, I believe, name one great Ohio State quarterback in the NFL. I can name a lot of great Ohio State cornerbacks, wide receivers. There hasn't been a ton of Ohio State quarterbacks that have been developed that have taken the next level. So I think he plays with all these perceptions, but Sam Acho's got one.
Name one great Alabama quarterback in the NFL.
Hey, wasn't Joe Burrow from Ohio State?
He was. He didn't get runtime because he went to LSU, which is
name
what made him
one
great
Alabama quarterback in the NFL. Yeah, Mac Jones is projected at number three right now.
What constitutes as great? Like, what do you mean?
I think my thing, I mean,
obviously
is this.
Tom Brady's great, bro. Like, I mean, no one's as good as him, you know, but like
Brady Gaga.
I just wonder. I wonder if, because I look at what happened with Lamar Jackson, 2 years ago in the draft. and he just fell all the way down. The Ravens actually traded back into the first round to get him. Otherwise, he was a 32nd pick overall. Otherwise, he would have been a second round pick. Yet he set every record you could imagine when it comes to running the ball at Louisville. He dropped. I wonder if there's a perception, like if race has an issue. And I'm posing the question, but also in my mind, I'm like, what is it about Justin Fields that makes you, because I get it, name one great Ohio State quarterback. I don't know any that went to the NFL and did well. But also name one great Alabama quarterback who went to the NFL and did phenomenal. I can't name you any. Yet Mac Jones is still the guy. And you know what I mean? Zach Wilson is, you know what I mean? It's like the same throw that Sam Darnold made in an actual game, falling back, leaning back against his body, dropped a dime. Sam Darnold made this throw for the New York Jets in a game. Zach Wilson made that throw in his pro day, and now all of a sudden Zach Wilson's the next great who's going to save the Jets. No one's saving the Jets, FYI. But I just sometimes I wonder if race has a part to play, if bias, implicit bias, has a part to play. I'd love to hear Steve or even Trey your opinion.
I mean, I think I think it does. I mean, the draft, and you know, Sam, you and I, we've talked about this. Like it, when I watch the NFL draft, I love the way, and I'm saying this mockingly, the way that people will say, you know, what an athlete, you know. Well, I can tell you what the color of the skin is by the description. Very smart in the pocket. Okay, white quarterback. Like this is how we've, in our implicit bias, we don't necessarily know how to actually talk about it. And I think what's interesting is everyone is so like enamored with Trevor Lawrence right now. So there is this bar that he is like out of this world, can't miss product, like prospect, like. And then there is this gap between him and everybody else where right now we don't know who the 49ers are going to pick at number three. Some say Trey Lance, you know, who feels like a Mitch Trubisky like pick. Like we don't necessarily know much about him, but it seems like I just watched some high school stats of him, and like one game he blocked a field goal, ran it back 50 yards, made this insane tackle, threw a 50 yard dart. Like, I mean, so such talent. But then at the same time, you're like Mac Jones, but then you're like, well, he had the best wide receivers in the country. Like, how great are you really? And what Alabama quarterback has done well in the NFL? Zach Wilson. I mean, Kyle Trask. I mean, I like that guy. I like Kyle Trask. That dude, I mean, has shown heart. I mean, that dude was the backup quarterback in high school and would come in the fourth quarter and just throw darts. I like a guy like him that I go, everyone's looked down on just like Tom Brady, and he's going to shock the world. For me, I draft Pitts or I draft Najee Harris.
If you're who, when and where, because here's the thing. So Pitts, I was doing college football analysis last year. So I was like watching the game, studying. Kyle Pitts should have won the Heisman.
100%.
There's even bias there. Of course, got to go to a quarterback or a receiver. Kyle Pitts and Trey, I think you would agree. Well, Trey, do you agree? What do you think about
100%.
Bingo. Like Kyle Pitts, like there's NFL college analysts who believe wholeheartedly that Kyle Pitts should have won the Heisman. But because of bias that exists when it comes to Heisman, you know, usually it's a quarterback or, like I said, a receiver, maybe running back. Kyle Pitts was never going to win. Similarly speaking, going back to just the first question of Kyle Pitts and Trey, you talking about him, Kyle Pitts, in a lot of ways, should be a higher draft pick than I think he's going to get picked. We don't know. The draft is today, so we'll find out today. But, man, I think it's hard to draft Kyle Pitts, a tight end, in the first, you know, top five picks. I just think it's not I don't see a team doing that.
I definitely do. I think Atlanta will at four. But my problem with Trey Lance is, bro, I don't want to ever come off to sound like a hater, because I don't hate on any of these guys. I hope they all have, you know, 20-year careers and they do really well. But bro, he's thrown like one third of the passes that all the other quarterbacks have thrown, you know, in the season or I think in his college career. And then the fact that the talent level of the guys he's playing against, you know, it's just it would be tough for me as a scout or as like a GM to be like, no question, 100%, that's the guy, you know, to go for, just because of the lack of experience in the games that he's played. If it was like a scenario where he played, you know, four to six games in the SEC or the Big Ten or the Big 12 against, like, you know, legit, you know, first round corners and, you know, first round D linemen and that type of stuff. And then he got hurt, you know, I would have a lot easier time drafting him if that was the case than, you know, going through a whole season and throwing, you know, a minimal amount of passes and kind of walking through the competition. So that's my only question with him. But I do think Pitts will go top five. I think he'll go four to Atlanta, which will be great for Matt Ryan if they don't go quarterback route, but we'll see. And I also do think with the draft in general, I think there's so much smoke and mirrors that go on. You know, I think GMs do feed the media, oh, we really like these two guys, when they're really focusing on, you know, the far left. And so I think just, you know, the smoke and mirrors, that's kind of, you know, what sells the tickets for the draft, because there's so much unpredictability and you hear all these reports. And, you know, at one point, the number two through number five teams have all said they're going to, or analysts have all said they're going to draft, you know, each one of those quarterbacks and Kyle Pitts and the best wide receiver and stuff like that. So I think I read something yesterday where this could be the first draft ever to not have a defensive player drafted in the top 10 picks. So I think that's another interesting stat. Once again, comes along with the draft day, all the stats in the world, you know, pop up and stuff.
Trey, can we hear your, because a lot of people have draft day stories. And there's this, like, there's a lot of, I think, pomp and circumstance that goes into the draft, but no one actually knows the stories of people who actually went through the draft and the ups and the downs. Can we hear your draft day, draft weekend story?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, really quick version of it. I had two or three teams that gave me a fourth round draft grade. And then, you know, a lot of the guys saying later rounds, they don't really give you specific rounds after the fourth round. And so my agent and I thought we were going to get drafted. We thought we had a really good chance of getting drafted. Did a family get together, actually, one of the first ones we had in a long time, at my uncle's house in Atlanta, Georgia. And so basically just a 3-day event where we all just hung out, we had food, and just got to spend time together. Watched the first round of the draft, obviously knew I wasn't going the first round. Thought I had a chance on the second day, you know, was obviously peeled to the TV, eyes were glued to the TV. Nothing happened that day. Third day goes by, and that's when, like, I started having my agent calling me more, started having coaches from, you know, teams reaching out saying, hey, you know, be ready. We're thinking about this. We're thinking about that. You know, it's going to be you or him, and all these, you know, all this smoke, you know, kind of everywhere. Not really so much uncertainty, not really know what's going on. And I actually got to the point where, like, I was so tired of watching guys from Division II and Division III schools getting drafted. And some of the schools I've never even heard where, like, I had to Google, like, where is this school at? You know, like, is this flag football or is this, you know, 11-on-11 football? Like, what the heck's going on? Just got really frustrated. I actually had to leave the outside area where the TVs were and I had to go take a nap. And so I slept for like an hour and I woke
during
up
the
and
draft.
Had, during the draft. During the third day of the draft. Yeah, during like the fifth or sixth round of the draft, I left, took an hour nap. Woke up, looked at my phone, had three or four missed calls from coaches. And I was like, man, I'm done with it. You know, I'm not even gonna watch anymore. I was pissed off, obviously, for dropping and not being drafted. And then long story short, when the last pick of the draft happened, it was Michael Sam from Missouri. I think he went to Dallas maybe at the time. Don't really. Oh, St. Louis, the Rams. Once he got drafted, so as soon as the draft is over, everybody who does not get drafted is now technically a restricted free agent or an undrafted free agent. And so teams call and they basically try to get you to join and be a part of their rookie mini camp that they have. And so we had a couple teams call, and really the only team that really stood out was Philadelphia, because Chip Kelly was the one who called me personally. It was like, hey, I want you to hear it from me. Like, we wanted to draft you, but we had other holes that we needed to fill. And yeah, we want you to come. And this is the scenario. We got, you know, four or six tight ends and you're going to compete. And if, you know, if we like you, you'll make the team and that type of stuff. And so from there on out, I really only had one. I mean, there's a couple other options, but really one legit option where it wasn't just a rookie mini camp tryout. It was more of like a, you're going to be on the team until training camp's over. And if you make it after training camp, then boom, you're on the team. But if not, then, you know, see you later. So that was basically my draft, I guess, scenario or what happened to me. But I knew what I found out when I got to the league or got to Philadelphia was like, you know, my whole mindset was like, don't, I could care less if I make the team here in Philly. I need to make one of the 32 teams, you know? And so no matter what position I'm in on the depth chart, or no matter what that might look like, or playing time, or how much I'm actually playing or practicing and getting reps, like none of that stuff really matters. What matters is like when practice is over, the extra stuff that I'm doing, learning the game of football and learning the NFL game. And then making sure that when I do get my opportunity, that one of the 32 teams, you know, will pick me up and want me to be, want me to play for them. So that was kind of my experience.
Did you hold grudges? Like if you, if once you make the Philadelphia Eagles and all of a sudden you're in preseason or you are in, you know, the regular season, year one, year two, and you're like, I thought you were going to draft me. So I'm going to ball out just to prove to you, you know, as an undrafted now in the NFL, like, or was that like, hey, every one of those 31 teams that didn't draft me, they were like, you held just a grudge those first, or are you like, no, I'm just grateful I'm in the league?
Yeah, I didn't really care much about, because I know a lot of it's really smoke and mirrors. So like they say they want you, but they're really just saying that so that, you know, maybe the media might catch wind, or, you know, they might, I don't know, whatever reason they say all that stuff. It was more for me, it was like, whenever we played any team, I knew that next year wasn't guaranteed, and I wanted to put good film out there so that maybe I'm on the, we're playing the Bucks. Maybe the Bucks might like me. You know, if I can carve them up enough, you know, or make a big enough splash in that game, then maybe when we're playing Carolina, maybe Carolina might like me. So that was more of my mindset. I'm not really a big, like a grudge type of guy, you know, but I was more of like, man, I just want to make a team. And if I'm not here next year, I want to be somewhere else and hopefully they like me.
Awesome. Acho, what about for you? I mean, like you're like sitting in a like a family like house, like dreaming this, or were you just like with friends? What was that like for you, the draft day experience?
Well, mine was a little bit different than Trey in that I remember my junior year, they said, okay, you know, we went to the national championship. We lost to Alabama. That was kind of when Alabama first really became Alabama. And I had a mid to late round draft projection. So that's like fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, right? And I hadn't graduated. And I knew graduating was really important to me. So I said, okay, let me go back and finish. Because I was actually thinking, like, we had like seven or eight guys from our defense go to the NFL. So I was like, man, if maybe this is my opportunity. Let me just leave now and I can come back and finish later. But I said, okay, let me graduate and go back and maybe I'll be able to improve my draft stock. And so we went back the next year and played really well, had 9 or 10 sacks, won a ton of awards. And all of a sudden, I was now a mid-round selection. So no projection. So no longer a mid to late, but mid. So in my mind, that's third, fourth, or fifth, right? The middle of 7, 3, 4, 5. But I was told that if I did well at the Senior Bowl, which is an all-star game, the combine, which is your, you know, big tryout, or the pro day, or really and the pro day, then my draft stock would rise. And so in my mind, competitor, like driven, just like Trey, right? It was like, hey, I want to show everybody, I want to get picked by any team. In my mind, it was like check, check, check. So I went to the Senior Bowl, and it was the year Von Miller, me and Von came out the same year. Von won, we were on the same team. Von won defensive MVP. I won most outstanding performance on defense, right? So Senior Bowl, check. Went to the combine and set a record that still holds right now in the L cone drill, the three cone, you know, three cone drill. Six ran a 6.69, which like DBs don't even run those numbers, all by the grace of God, but set a record. Top five performer in the 40, ran a 4.6 at 260 pounds. Top five performer in the 5.10, 5. So like set records, did well, combine, check. Went to the pro day, which is like a smaller tryout where teams come to you. So now instead of you going to them, teams will come and watch you and your other classmates, potential draftees. Went there. In college, I was a defensive lineman. So Trey knows, Trey played a myriad of positions in college. And so I'm sure in your pro day, you were playing different positions, right? Tight end, different doing things. And so—
Dude, after the combine, I'm done with the workout. And you know how tired you are after the workout, right? Because you do all these dang drills and stuff. And I'm done. I'm walking off the field, about to go catch my flight. And like two or three guys, scouts come up to me and say, hey, are you doing the running back workout as well? And I'm like, heck no, bro. Like, what y'all just put me through, dude? Ain't no way I'm doing another workout.
So you, because Trey played tight end, running back, quarterback, receiver. So like at the combine and even at pro days, they want to see, are you flexible? Can we move? Can you be a move back? Can you be that H back that Trey plays on? Can you line up at receiver? Can you be running back? So for me, they wanted to know, okay, Sam, you played defensive line, like you played like defensive tackle in a lot of times in college, but you're going to be an outside linebacker in the NFL. Can you do it? And so that was what my pro day was. I was dropping into coverage. I was meeting with coaches, talking about defenses and schemes and offenses, right? I had to learn all that. I hadn't learned any of that because I was playing like three technique and four eye in a lot of time, which is like, you know, just defensive line. So I had to learn that. And I did really, really well. And so in my mind, because I was told if I do well at those things, my draft stock will rise. In my mind, my draft stock had risen. But not only in my mind, I had conversations from coaches. This is why I asked Trey, like, hey, what did they tell you? Like Mike Tomlin, the head coach of the Steelers, after my pro day was like, hey, Acho, I'm walking back to my car. He said, you ready to be a Steeler? And I'm like, yes, sir. You know what I mean? I did really well. Like I had a coach from the Oakland Raiders who called me and said, Sam, you're going to be our second round pick. He's like, it's between you and one other guy. There's one offensive lineman we're looking at. But I actually flew out to Oakland, had a workout with them a week or two before the draft. They were like, dude, you were phenomenal. You're going to be our second round pick if we don't take this other O-lineman. So I was kind of like happy, but also kind of sad because it was Oakland. Oakland was bad at the time. Still are. Now Las Vegas is still bad. But anyways, I was like, well, at least I'm going to go second round, maybe, you know, third at the worst, because if they get the other guy. And so like even my agent had told me, like, man, maybe first. Like not, you never, I was thinking like Tebow, you know what I mean? You never know, Tebow kind of flew up. But like second, third at the worst. So day one came and went and nothing. Nobody called. Which is round one. Day two, which is rounds two and three, right? Everyone had told me you're going to be a second and third round pick. Day two is rounds two and three. Comes and goes. And at the very end of the third round, which is the very end of the second day, third round, my phone rings and it's my agent. And as it's ringing, the Baltimore Ravens are on the clock. They were a team who I met with as well, who showed a ton of interest. And so, like, I pick up, and all of a sudden, I'm at home with family, invited family and friends, and not family's friends, everybody. And, like, I pick up, it's my agent, and Baltimore's on the clock. My family starts freaking out. They're like, we're going to Baltimore. Woo! Even Tampa was interested. And they were like all the teams that are interested, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, New England, all those teams were at the end of the third round. So, like, we're going. I'm like, guys, calm down. Like, this, you know, it's my day. Let me do my thing. I was ready. I don't even wear fitted hats, but I had a fitted hat on that day. That's how in my head.
Your head's
was.
Too big.
That's facts. I have a big head. And so family's freaking out. Friends are celebrating, high-fiving. And I'm like, listen to my agent. I'm like, hey, guys, calm down. So what's the word? You know, we're kind of like small talking. Hey, how you doing? Good. I'm like, so finally after a minute or two, like 30, 40 seconds, I'm like, hey, so what? Like, who is it? Is it Baltimore? Is it New England? Like, and I said, who called? He said, oh, Sam, nobody called. I was just calling to see if you had heard anything. I said, what? He said, Sam, I am so sorry. Everything that I heard said you were going to get picked today. I don't know what happened. Keep your head up. We're going to be okay. I hung up the phone. I had nothing planned for day three. No draft party. No, I was like, y'all coming day one, coming day two. I hang up the phone. I kind of share the news. We're not getting drafted today. And I gave this kind of speech or something. I don't know what exactly I said, but I said, hey, thank y'all for coming. I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. If you want to come back tomorrow, I mean, I'll be here. But yeah, it is what it is. I go up to my room. Everybody leaves, and I just begin to weep. And I think the reason why is that all these people were just lying to me. So, like, am I like, why would they lie? You know what I mean? Like, why would my agent lie? Why would these teams lie? Why would these coaches, like this coach actually had helped train me during my training process. He wasn't on it. He didn't have a job at the time. It was kind of that free agent period for coaches. He was helping out with my trainer, was training me. And he said, dude, like you're really, really good. He said, man, if I was an NFL coach right now, you'd be a first round steal. And I'm like, okay, well, sounds good, but you're not an NFL coach. 2 weeks later, he gets hired to be the defensive coordinator for the Oakland Raiders.
Wow.
That was the guy who flew me in.
Before the draft.
Before the draft.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting here like, so fast forward draft night, weeping. I remember just praying and just being like, God, and I talk about this in my book, and Let the World See You. I remember just being like, and my sister came in as well. Like, that was a crazy thing too. My sister actually come up to my room, knocked on the door, and she saw me, and she had never seen me, my older sister. I looked up to her, still look up to her to this day. She had never seen me cry. And she looked at me, she said, all those teams are going to regret it. Every single one of those teams is going to regret it. And I kind of just shook my head. I closed the door and I just prayed. I was like, God, like, you know my heart. You know that I'm not in it for the money. I'm not in it for the fame or for women or for whatever people. I don't want any of that, God. I just want to make your name famous. Like, I just want to use my gifts for your glory. So God, just give me an opportunity. I don't care if it's the fourth round, sixth. I don't care if I'm undrafted. Just give me a chance and I will make your name famous. That was what I prayed. And I said, amen. It's similar to Trey. Day three came and I think I woke up, didn't even know when it started. I woke up, we ordered some food, like some IHOP or something, some random like breakfast food. And the food was delivered. We were praying for the food. It was me, families, a couple friends came by. We turned the TV on. I think the draft had just started, right? The first pick or two for the fourth round we're in. We pray for the food. As soon as we say amen, the phone rings. And not my cell phone. It was the house phone, the home phone. And the caller ID came up it showed up on the TV, somehow connected, and it said Arizona Cardinals. I pick up. And I was pretty somber, like, hey, hello, you know, like, hey, Sam, this is, you know, Michael Bidwell, you know, from the Arizona Cardinals. Congratulations. We're going to pick you with our next pick. I'm like, all right. They're like, well, aren't you excited? I was like, well, I mean, I've heard stuff like this before. So they're like, well, no, we're going to pick you. Like, we have the next pick. So as long as this team that's picking right now doesn't take you with the third pick in the fourth round, we're going to take you with the fourth. I'm like, all right. They're like, okay, well, you know, so anything, you know, I was like, no, I'm all good. I said, but do you mind, like, could you, because they're like, all right, we're going to hang up and we'll call you as soon as we draft you. And I'm like, well, would you mind just staying on the phone? Like, what do you mean? I said, well, I've heard this before. I've heard people tell me they're going to pick me. Can you just stay on so I can see you draft me? And he was like, Sam, we actually need to hang up so we can call Roger Goodell and let him know that we're picking you. So if you don't mind, I'm like, okay, well, thanks. So I hang up the phone and my family's like, we're going to Arizona. And I still, I just waited. I waited because I wanted to see with my eyes that they were going to pick me. Funny enough, as God would have it, it went to commercial break. So like I went after and I saw, but then we celebrated. And so it was just this different moment. I hadn't talked to Arizona the entire draft process. They were not one of the teams. Couldn't name you one player who played for the Cardinals at the time. But my whole goal was to go and like glorify God with the opportunity. Undrafted, free agent, fourth round. It didn't matter. I ended up getting drafted with the fourth pick in the fourth round, 103rd overall. And the rest was history.
I think it's cool. Like, and what people probably don't realize is that if you get drafted after the fifth round, you might as well be a free agent for like you get more. There's more perks from becoming a free agent. Like, so like if you would have made it past the fourth round, I bet you probably would have been like, ah, let me be a free agent, because when you get drafted from second round to seventh round, you have to sign a 4-year deal. Whereas if you're undrafted, you sign a 3-year deal, you know, which, you know, comes with some pros and some cons, but and then you also get to pick where you get to go instead of having to, you know, be chosen. But, you know, from first round to fourth round, the money, it makes a lot more sense to be drafted. But after that, it makes more sense, you know, or you want to be undrafted, but that's a crazy story, bro.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But it worked in your benefit being drafted later, being undrafted. Yeah, you got to pick your team. Like sometimes people get drafted into bad systems. Right? That's why I feel bad for Zach Wilson. Like the Jets have been bad for a long time and people are expecting him to be the savior of the Jets. I know there are a couple people who listen who are Jets fans. I'm not bashing Zach Wilson, but the Jets have just been bad. And so like you can't expect him to come and be the savior. But to Trey, your point, you got a chance to choose your team. You had multiple teams say, hey, we're interested, but now you got a chance to choose number one. And number two, your contract was shorter. So since you played well, you got a chance to renegotiate sooner and get another deal and another deal. And so, like, sometimes I think that we have expectations that we hold on to.
Yeah.
And it's like, I got to get this. And if I get this, everything will be okay. For me, man, I got first round pick. Yeah, I'll really, you know, people really glorify God because I'm drafting the first round. And it's like, or second or third. And God was like, I have a different plan. You're going to go to, in a lot of ways, a no-name team because nobody knew about Arizona at the time. You're going to be with a new kind of coordinator and coaching staff, but you're going to get an opportunity to shine. And shine, I did. Halfway through my rookie year, I got a chance to start. I set or tied the rookie sack record, or maybe second overall for the rookie sack record, rookie year. Second year, started every single game, like opportunity, but it was not and never the way I could have ever imagined.
Dude, that's so fascinating. I mean, you guys didn't ask about my experience, but, you know.
tell us. I would love to hear about it.
Yeah, go ahead, yeah. Please. You know, I dominated at the Rock Harbor Fullerton Toros Flag Football League. And so I entered into the draft, and I was really excited. At the end of the fourth round, GM calls me, and I was like, hey, I don't want to go. Like, I don't want to be on this team. I don't think I'm going to fit well in the system. I'd rather be a fifth round draft pick.
Yeah.
So then I could you know,
it wasn't a good situation for you.
It
wasn't
a good situation. So I actually was. Yeah. So I was like, then fifth round, some teams called. I was like, no. Here's the deal. What I want to be is an undrafted free agent. The problem is for the last 20 years, I've been an undrafted free agent. I actually blame my agent. So it's hard. So this like watching the NFL draft. Yeah. I blame my agent because like,
you haven't fired him yet.
He's not returning my calls. Okay. So he
fired you. I got you.
I'll tell you what though. And that flag football league, bro. I had some moves. I was like a natural R2, like on the PlayStation, bro. Little shimmy, dude. Little shimmy. You can't stop this. So, but here, real quick, though,
you had a different calling. Tell him, hey, I had a different calling, man. I needed, you know what I mean? If y'all gonna, y'all, you needed to hire, you needed a bigger contract. You needed you know what I mean? You,
I bid well when I said, you don't want this. You don't want me. You don't want me. I got bigger dreams. No,
that's but, funny, bro.
Hey, here's the thing I got a question about because, you know, just shifting to the NBA real quick, because I feel like Draymond Green, you know, he could rattle off all the teams who didn't draft him. You know, the stories of Aaron Rodgers just going waiting and painfully in that kind of green room as Alex Smith goes before him. And obviously every team just wished they would have drafted Aaron. But I often wonder when you are this college student, you have all of these hopes, you have all of these dreams, and you've got people who are just in your ear, like you mentioned, just lying to you. How does it not jade you? You know what I mean? Like, and I think that's, you know, and we'll get to the NBA in a second, but like, it's almost like you're awakened to that. This is literally a business, but has that shifted in your mindset because you've experienced it already playing in the SEC or the Big 12 that's prepared you for this? Sam, how do you approach that?
Well, I actually want to flip it on its head a little bit. I want to ask you, Steve.
As an undrafted free agent?
As an undrafted black football free agent.
Yeah, it's good.
Well, no, but I want to ask you that feeling of being jaded. Because you're even in a space in the church world where it's like people are supposed to be like, it seems like it's like, man, how do we love God well? And a lot of people aren't doing that, especially in the world that you live in. What has it been like for you to be jaded? And then how do you recover from that?
Great question. I mean, honestly, I have this belief that people are really, really good. And, good people do evil. So it's like, and good people get played and good people get left holding the bag. So it's like, it's pretty much, hey, like we were created, our Bible begins in Genesis 1. So we're created good, but good people do evil and evil is just co-opted good. I mean, we can co-opt anything that's good, sex, money, power, anything, our gifts, our talents, we can co-opt it for our own glory. And so you see that. And so whenever I see that on the news, or I see it in sports, or I see it in the church, or I see it in the business world, I just kind of look at it and go, okay, like, and the natural progression is to make the gift about you, not about the giver. And so when you see that happen, it doesn't surprise me as much as it did probably when I was 19 or 24. But it still makes me sad. And it also makes me really, really afraid that, it could also be me too. I could do that too. So it's not like, ah, man, those guys, I mean, it's within me. So how do you stay grounded and humble and centered and continually eyes focused on the giver, not just on the gift and what perks and privileges the gift can give you? So that's kind of how I look at it.
Trey, what's your perspective? Because you know, you and I, personalities are maybe opposites, probably not the best word, but it's probably a pretty close word.
Yeah.
What's your response to either people being jaded or people trying to get one over on you, or how do you respond?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of to answer Steve's question from earlier and then kind of answer yours, like I was so trained that like that was okay. And that's kind of how it was, because, you know, getting recruited and going to college. And I mean, my first day on campus at Florida, I remember I'm in the weight room. It's me, an offensive lineman, and a safety. And we're getting ready to do like just height, weight, you know, measurements, literally your first day on campus, first workout, nothing crazy. And the Urban walks in, he's the head coach at the time. He walks in and like, he like makes a straight line to us and he stops in front of us and we're like, coach, what's up? You know, cause we great relationship, right? Just getting recruited. And he goes to the DB, you're too slow. And he goes to offensive lineman, you're not big enough for the offensive line. And I was a quarterback at the time. And he says, you can't throw. I hope you guys weren't recruiting mistakes, and turns around and walks away. And we were like, what? Like, this ain't the same dude that was recruiting us, that was sitting at, you know, in the living room or at the high school, you know, bro, like, was mind blown. But like, that's kind of my introduction to how it was. And that's how people do things. You know, I mean, you could even go further back. Like for me, like I grew up without a dad. My dad left when I was 2 weeks old, said he didn't want to have kids. I'm thinking to myself like, that don't make no sense. You know, like, come on. And then tries to come back, you know, when I'm like 9 or 10. And we go to see him at his house once a week on Wednesday, and we go to his house on Wednesday and he's not there no more. Like literally moves out, cleaned up, gone, no more. So like for me, like that's growing up, but like, that's kind of what we knew. You know, you go to college again, like every year, a new head coach or new offense coordinator, new faces, new people, guys leaving. So it was kind of common for me. So like instead of having the grudge, like Steve said, like my thought process was like, man, like, let's just do it. You know, like, let's get in. And I do understand like people hurt people, you know, especially hurt people. And I do understand that. And I do understand, like you said, Steve, like I'm really afraid to hurt someone, but I also am human, you know, and I never want to seem like I'm almighty or I'm all powerful or I'm, you know, bigger than God or anything like that. Like I'm never would ever say anything even close to that, but I do understand that and I'm sensitive to it. So my thought process is just like, you know, someone eventually is going to hurt me and I'm going to be okay with that. Like I'm cool, cause I understand you're human and you probably didn't mean to necessarily do that. And so how can we go, how can we go forward? What's the next step? Progressive, you know, type thinking, I guess, in a way you could say that.
Okay. But here's the thing I never understand. Cause what you just said was so awesome, is how do you differentiate? Like you've got a GM who's saying one thing, game 12, bye week, then the offseason comes and they make a move. And it's like a business decision, but are business decisions personal decisions? Or do you look at it and go, that's business? Like, you know, when the Cardinals or the Bears or whatever the team is that's done that for you guys, how do you guys see that?
I do think we give a lot of people a lot more credit than they probably should get. And I do think a lot of times people don't really know what is going to happen and really what to do. And they want to just do something because of outside pressures. I do believe, you know, especially from a football organizational standpoint, like, bro, if you're going to sit here and tell me that the guys after the fourth pick know what they're actually going to do, they have no clue what they're going to do, because you never know who's going to get picked second. You don't know who's going to get picked third. So, like, you know, a lot of this stuff is like, man, who really knows what's going to happen? That's why all the mock draft stuff is just crap, in my opinion, because, dude, no one really knows what's going to happen. And you just never know, you know, really. And so for me, like, yeah, I was obviously disappointed. And I felt like, from the Chicago standpoint, I didn't feel like I had my fair chance to do what I wanted to do. But I can understand from a business side of things, you know, why they made their move. And if they thought that was good for them, then so be it. But, you know, I'm going to play somewhere else and going to do what I need to do and not really focus on, you know, it's kind of like worrying about something that you can't control. Like, I have no time for that. And I know a lot of people love to do that and worry about the uncontrollable. Like, bro, there's nothing I could do. It's not in my hands, you know, but what I can do is, you know, try to get healthy and play and, you know, support my family. So that's kind of my take, because there's so many other things, you know, we got to worry about as parents and husbands and fathers and stuff like that. So.
Were you?
I love it. Okay. Too quick. Oh, go ahead, Sam.
I just got one for you, Trey, because I was there, you know, in Chicago. We were in Chicago together. And we left right around the same time. Were you happy when they were struggling? Because I was.
Like, after you left. I mean, yeah, yes and no. My problem is, like, I'm really good friends with Foles, you know, and I was friends with Trubisky when I played for the Bears. So I never wanted to see them do bad, you know. But I think, like, if they're going to paint me as being the problem, then obviously that's not the case. There's a lot more problems than just one person. And so I think it's just deeper than, you know, what they may have thought. So, but yeah, I don't know. I like to see the team I'm on win, you know what I mean? If that's the case. And we did beat them during the year last year. So that was fun.
Man, I like, there's so many ways that we can go with that, but I love that phrase that you said, like, we too often worry about the things that are out of our control. And I think, you know, that's one of the, I think it's one of the most amazing props that sports bring, is it, the great athletes go, this is what I can control. I'm going to stay in the present. This is what I can control. And I think it correlates so well to faith. It correlates so well to how we train up our kids. I know we only got a few more minutes left, but I want to hit really quickly the NBA. What are you liking right now about the NBA? I mean, I think it's been absolutely so much fun to see the Knicks winning again, to see Steph being Steph, to see the NBA like minus LeBron and Harden. Like, but like, what do you like right now as you turn on SportsCenter or watch a game?
And Durant as well, for the most part. Yeah,
that's right.
He's been out
right.
The last couple weeks. Bro, this dude, Luka Doncic, is that how you say it? Bro, this guy's, dude, he's out of control, man. He's like, he's a cheat code, dude. I've never seen anything like that, bro. I mean, he's like Dirk, but like, more athletic, you know, like, and Dirk was awesome to watch too. But I watched the highlight maybe yesterday when he played the Warriors, and they were shorthanded and they beat the heck out of the Warriors. But bro, like, every shot he shoots goes in almost, you know, for the most part.
And he looks like he's playing so slow.
Yeah, he does though.
It's like it, and you're like, you don't know what he's gonna do. And I mean, and having so much fun doing it. I mean, I think the Warriors went 9 minutes without scoring, and they went on a 30-0 run. Dallas did, you know. So Luka is unbelievable. He's must watch TV. Sam, what about for you?
Well, even watching Steph do what he does, and I understand that they got blown out by Dallas not too long ago, but Steph has been phenomenal. Like, he's a cheat code. And even watching years ago, like, for me, it's been interesting to see how he's continually gotten better. Like, that's the thing. Like, we talk about this underdog story and being overlooked. I grew up in Dallas, so I was a Mavericks fan, and I remember when Golden State was trash.
Yeah,
and they played fast, right? Leandro Barbosa, they had Don Nelson coaching them. Like, they played fast. They actually beat
Baron Davis,
playoffs.
Right?
Yeah, Baron Davis.
Yeah,
yeah. Baron Davis was like kind of on his way out when they were going to this kind of newer style. Like, but like, they were trash in a lot of ways. Now all of a sudden they're the team. And then Steph Curry and his story, injuries, and Davidson. And then, like, he's unstoppable. He's a literal cheat code. And so watching his unprecedented success has been fun for me. And also, it's cool for me to see teams like the Knicks and the Suns do well.
Yeah.
I am a pessimist in some ways when it comes to sports, because I'm like, bro, it's the Knicks. They're not going to go anywhere. It's the Suns. They're not going to go anywhere. Like, that's still how I think. So I'm hoping they – I don't think they're going to prove me wrong, but – It's fun to see them do well. It's fun to see. I'm confused watching Phoenix play well because I lived in Arizona for many years. I'm like, bro, this ain't, man. You know, they've got some talented players. So anyways, yeah, it's interesting. I'm in a lot of ways waiting to see if this is the real Phoenix Suns, New York Knicks, or if this is just a phase.
Let me just say one thing. One of my favorite quotes ever by a coach was from Steve Kerr. And Steve Kerr talking about the two most competitive people he's ever seen were Michael Jordan and Steph Curry. And he said the difference about them was what motivated them. He said that Jordan was motivated by anger and Curry is motivated by joy. And I love watching when Curry plays and he hits that and he just does a little shimmy. And I mean, there's so much joy that Curry brings to the game. The second thing, you bring up the Phoenix Suns. I'll tell you what, I love Chris Paul. He's the point god. You know, when they talk about him, he makes every team better. I mean,
He does.
He's constantly coaching, and he's the guy that you hate if you play against him. You absolutely love when he's on your team. And I just sit here and I go, can you just imagine if David Stern would have allowed Chris Paul to join Kobe? I mean, yeah, it would have been bonkers, those two together. But it's Phoenix right now is just, they are so excited. I'm here in Arizona. They are so excited about Booker, Ayton, Bridges. I mean, this squad, Chris Paul. I mean, there's a lot of hope. The crazy part is number one seed is Utah, which is just in that same kind of, you know, pessimism that you're talking about. Number two is Phoenix. Number three is the Clippers. I mean, and we still haven't seen LeBron back. So it's going to be fascinating. Fascinating.
It has been fun, though, I will say, for me to see the Lakers do well sans LeBron. Yeah. Like, it's been, I've been amazed and fascinated to see the Lakers still succeed, even though LeBron's not playing. For me, that points to leadership. That points to, oh, wow, this dude knows how to coach, inspire, and lead his team even when he's not there. That's just my little kind of little slice of the pie that I see right now. But that, on a different level, gets my mind going of like, man, how can he still have his players play at such a high level? And I understand he's not the coach, but he low-key is. Like, how can he have his players play at such a high level though he's not playing?
And that's my argument. Everything we've talked about before this right now really doesn't matter because you're going to have the Lakers in the championship and most likely the Nets. So it's been fun to watch all these dudes, and they've put up some crazy numbers and they're really entertaining. But when old boy LeBron comes back in the game, we already know what time it is. Another ring for my guy. So,
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, hey, if you're listening, just know Home Team Podcast, we exist. This is the intersection of faith, sports, family, culture. But we want to know, who do you think is going to be in the finals of the NBA? You got to speak it into existence right now. Are you with Trey that it's going to be KD, LeBron? That will be must-see TV. Or are you kind of hopeful that it's going to be the Knicks and the Suns? I don't know. Or Philly. Who do you got? Hey, speaking of ratings, though, what I love is, Trey, you again, Acho made fun of you last week about this. You are constantly finding the most bizarre random stats to back up Florida. But you also sometimes find some actual gems. And this week, you sent two incredible gems in regards to women's sports. Bring that to the home team listeners right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, you know, going through Twitter the other day. I follow Holly Rowe. Big fan of her. I think she does a phenomenal job.
Legend.
Legend. No question about that. We were also talking about, you know, women's volleyball last week in our little rant between, you know, each other's schools. Michigan wasn't there, so you weren't really saying much, Steve. But Sam and I were. And
we were celebrating the women's gymnastics title. Oh, by the way, how did Texas do? Did they win?
They weren't there either. No. Oh, no, they weren't there. Okay. No. But regardless, women's volleyball championship, Texas, Kentucky. One of the things Holly Rowe tweeted, which I love, was it averaged the game averaged nearly 700,000 viewers, and it was the most watched show on ESPN2 this month. And so really cool to see 28% increase in average fan watching from the year before, previous year. So I wouldn't say it's because of Texas by no means, but the women bought.
I had something to do with that. I had it on two TV. I had it on. Well, no, I was at my brother-in-law's house. So I threw it on his TV. I had my little thing on my phone, the app on my phone. So I had it on my, it wasn't working on my phone for whatever reason. So I had it on multiple devices. So shout out to me and all Texas fans. I think we did this together, hook 'em horns. But I will say this. One of my really good friends, her name is Julianne Fawcett or Julianne Johnson. She played at Texas. She phenomenal, like number one rated in high school, left college, one of the top players, but had to go overseas because there was no market for women's volleyball here in America. And not too long ago, they started this women's league in America that's starting to grow a little bit, and it's positive. But for me, I just get really, really excited when I see and when I saw the stats that Trey sent over about the ratings, how this was the most watched program on ESPN2 this month. Like, so for those who say, well, women's sports, there's no market for them, or it's not, like, those people don't actually watch. Right. Oh, women's basketball. You can't, like, you actually must not be watching. I got some friends who play in the WNBA. They are phenomenal. Phenomenal. Like, put on the games. I'm like, let's go. And Chicago Sky, by the way, shout out. We just got Candace Parker.
Did you really? Good for you.
We did. And so I'm not on the bandwagon. I've been repping the Chicago Sky, just so y'all know when we get our championship. But like, for me, I just get frustrated when people say, well, women's sports is women's. It's like, bro, open up your eyes and watch the game. Oh, and by the way, now look at the ratings. Now say something. We need to start our own network, the home team network.
And it's really great too. Is, you know, when, and I thought Trey was going to bring this up, I feel like he left it for me. So thank you for the assist. You're the home team point guard right there. But like, I'll tell you, what's amazing is University of Kentucky, this is their first national championship in women's volleyball. So it's not like they've got a culture of dominance that they're bringing in all of these fans. So this was a first time winner because they defeated Texas. Well done, UK.
They've appeared in the five of the last maybe eight national championships. I think they've won two, just in case we forgot. Yeah. In the last maybe 10 years, they've been to five or something like that. They've won two. I'm trying to think what else.
You got to control what you can control. Don't want to live in the past. Okay.
I'm going to change gears here as well. One more time. UFC 261 in Jacksonville, first full stadium event.
Hold on. We got to do this the right way, because this is like what Trey's about to bring up is phenomenal. So y'all listen to the Home Team podcast. We talk faith, sports, culture, but listen to what Trey's about to bring up. So yes, we talked about volleyball, women's volleyball. We talked about the NFL draft, talked about the NBA, but UFC. Trey, holler at us. Let us know.
Ultimate Fighting Championship, which I mean, I don't know if it'll be the number one sport in the world, but I do think it will reach top three sports. It's not going to surpass soccer, but I think, man, the fact that you're able to be the best in your country and be able to fight against other people from other countries on a weekly basis, I think it's pretty cool. But Dana White's done an unbelievable job of building that from the ground up. But one really cool thing that Dana's done has put a huge emphasis on women fighters. This last week, UFC 261 in Jacksonville, top three fights, two of the three were women, and they were unbelievable fights, and they were won by unbelievable fighters. Thug Rose won, Valentina Shevchenko won as well. Just, they're so much fun to watch. They're so dominant. You also got Amanda Nunes, you got Ronda Rousey, you got women who were being, you know, spoken of all around the world. Just for being able to fight the way they are. So it was really cool to see a monster event. You know, you had the main event with Usman and Masvidal, and then you had two other major women fights as well. Just a lot of fun. And these girls can fight now. They're the real deal. Exciting, really exciting fights. I don't know if you guys watched them or not, but I was actually at the fight. It was really cool to watch.
I would really love to see the analytics on who's actually buying these fights and what's the breakdown. When you were there, Trey, like when you look around, is it 60-40 women and men, or is it 50-50? Is it 80-20 men to women? Like, are you seeing like the you know, women, you know, like when you're in a big market city, I always know I am, like when I'm in Pittsburgh and I see women walking around in Steelers jerseys or Bears jerseys or Blackhawk jerseys, you know. Do you find when you're at the event at a UFC, which I always thought just was like University of Florida, Coral Gables or something, but like, is this like, you're seeing more women than in the last 5 years that are actually literal fans? Cause I've obviously seen the emergence of these amazing athletes and the fights being highly promoted, but I'm just curious about the fans.
Yeah, I would say it's probably 35, in my opinion. But I do think, like, I think the difference between other sports here in America and UFC is it's a global scale. Like no matter where you are, there's a good chance. Like if you live in Russia, there's a good chance there's a Russian guy or girl who's going to fight, you know, in the UFC, like the major countries, same with China. Like there's a woman that fought from China last weekend. So I think it's just more of a global scale thing. But bro, I mean, these girls are legit. Like these girls are unbelievable and they're so much fun to watch. And it's really, really competitive. I think they do a great job.
What was it that you saw? Because you were there, like what was it that made it so special seeing it up close and personal?
Just how technically advanced they are. It's not just like two people sock and bock them each other. Like it's like they're unbelievable on the ground. They can stand up and fight. I would argue that the Rose and Wei Li fight, which was the co-main event, was more cheered on than the main event with Usman and Masvidal. Like I think especially when Rose came out of, you know, the tunnel, like bro, people were going bonkers for her. And just, I don't know. I mean, they're warriors, bro. You watch, it's not just one fight, you know, that makes you, it's a career of fights. And just the trilogy that Rose had, the fights before, and Wei Li, the way she's just, you know, dominated the division. And you got girls like Amanda Nunes. Amanda Nunes might be the best MMA fighter in the history of MMA. You know, you got John Jones, you got McGregor, you got, you know, multiple other guys who are unbelievable at what they do. But I think Amanda Nunes has a chance. I mean, bro, no one has a shot against her. She could beat up anybody on any given day. So, and that's the sport where you literally don't know what could happen. You know, you can knock someone down in 5 seconds, or you could be the big time over, favorite and get beat up by an underdog. Like you just never know what's going to happen.
I'll pay right now to watch Amanda Nunes take down Jake Paul. Just gonna say it right now.
I would double that. Whatever you're paying, I'll double what you pay. He was there, by the way. No one can still stand him. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little heat I saw on the cameras. Like he was popping off. So
well, they just announced apparently he might be fighting Mayweather.
It's not a real fight. It's not a real fight. It's like you can't knock each other out. And there's a bunch of like stipulations and rules to it. It's not, and like if Mayweather loses, it doesn't go against his record and, you know, all that type of stuff. So it's just more of like a money grab.
Well, this is a great question to end, because Trey, this is a Trey Burton typical question, because we got to keep it light. This is what Trey always loves, is if you could fight anybody, if you like in a celebrity. Let's go right now.
Hey, the way he said it and looked in the camera, y'all didn't see the way he looked in the camera and said it.
Yo, I'm scared.
I can fight you. You cool with that?
I mean, I'd lose this, bro. Urban Meyer walked by and be like, "That's why you're an undrafted free agent."
So, what's your question, bro? If we can fight one person?
Yeah, one person, celebrity. Like, so it's got to be some celebrity, and it goes to charity.
I mean. The money raised is going to charity. You got to do Conor McGregor. He's the biggest, baddest name in the sport. I mean, he draws, it's not even close to the amount of viewers that he draws when he fights. So I would do it for charity. For IJM, I would get knocked out by Conor McGregor. Or Tyson. You know what I mean? Those are like the two biggest names you could possibly think of.
Usman. Give me a year to train. No. Give me a year to train. I'm not going to say I'm getting knocked out. Give me a year to train. I got to fight Usman. The way that he punched old dude,
nasty,
like,
bro.
With his entire body.
Yeah.
Like.
I was watching DC, Daniel Cormier was break. No, maybe it was maybe DC. They're breaking it down about how he punches and how he's able to get more range. Like, so his reach is, you know, whatever, but he's able to extend that because when he throws his right hook, he steps with his right foot, which gives him an extra couple inches or feet to, you know, reach you with. But bro, he smacked Masvidal. Like, and I was hoping that Masvidal won so that they could fight one more time. Cause they've had good. I mean, the first fight was good. Masvidal took it 10 days notice, went the whole distance. And then this fight, first round was awesome. Super competitive, just, you know, throwing blows, but obviously caught him pretty good.
Man, that's amazing. Well, I hope that never happens, because I'd be worried that you two would not be able to come back and do this podcast. But friends, let us know who you think is going to win
the NBA. We'd raise a lot of money for charity, though.
Hey, that's what it's all about, man.
IJM,
bro. That's what I'm talking about.
Shout out to IJM.
Acho can't open his left eye forever. But IJM, bro, it's a great organization.
Sacrifice, bro. Sacrifice.
It's not about what you do for you. It's what do you do for others?
Well, hey, thanks so much for tuning into the Home Team Podcast. We are so grateful. Let us know what you and who you think is going to win the NBA Finals. Speaking to that, let us know what you thought about the draft. And if there's ever any ways that we can serve you, find us on Instagram or Twitter. Subscribe, share, and we love interacting with you. We hope you guys have a great, great week. We'll see you next week. Grace and peace.